In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. We are on episode 37, I think. And we are doing part 3 of The Veil of Mysteries. And beginning that, we're doing The Interval and chapter 14.
The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you.
This is The Veil of Mysteries, part 3, Invasion. Interval.
He had beaten the odds for too long. He'd known something like this had to happen to him eventually, but not with the girl along. Lightmaker consumed them and all their works, but especially this twisted situation. He checked the scanners again, hoping he was wrong, but knowing deep down that he wasn't. Then looked outside at the streaks of light dogging his heels. He had spent most of the life he could remember in the battle against them. He'd visited Earth, the heart of their power, too many times to remember. Even after Lastus killed his father, he'd redoubled his efforts, rescuing the innocent from them wherever he could. He couldn't get to Earth now. It was ringed with sensor networks and defenses so thick it would take a miracle to get through alive. Getting through undetected was flat impossible. The billions who lived there were held captive, their lives barely better than those of animals. There was a chance that he could make it to the moon or one of the other inner planets, but not a good one. And there would be no one there to greet him if he did. Whatever dregs of humanity remained free in the universe stayed as far away from Sol as they possibly could, except him. He'd known he was going to die someday, that his refusal to take to his heels and run away from the monsters would end him, and he'd tried it once or twice. He couldn't. It would have been a betrayal of all his father lived and died for, and now it was all he knew. Hurting the enemy in any way possible, and freeing whoever he could from their grasp. What impulse had possessed him to bring the girl along on his wild crusade? He still wasn't quite sure. Utter hubris, probably. She was like his kid sister. He knew the comparison irked her, which was one reason he made it, if he was being honest with himself. He smiled and glanced over to where she sat, bent over and fiddling with something in her lap. She was always building some kind of gadget or experimenting with something new. It reminded him of his dad. He smiled again, as much a grimace as a smile, filled with pain. Again he looked down at his scanners and shook his head. "There's no way out of this one," he said. He could sense her trademark challenging glare on the back of his head.
"Are you feeling guilty again? I told you it was my choice. I do get to make my own choices, you know."
He just shook his head again in response, unable to meet her eyes. She asked,
"Where are we going?"
"Going to Sol. No choice. No other chance to evade. Not out here." His voice must have carried his defeat, but her tone never changed. She didn't even seem worried. She nodded.
Well, when we get there, I need your help.
He did look up and catch her eye then, surprised. What? She smiled fairly, but with some real humor, and, he thought, maybe a bit of fondness. She held up the device she'd been tinkering with.
It's my turn to save your butt this time, but we have to get this closer to them than to us, and it'd help if we weren't moving so fast.
She jerked her thumb in the general direction of their pursuers. There was a glint in her eye that he hadn't seen before as she said,
I'm glad I came along. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
All right, and that is the end of the interval. This is chapter 14 of The Veil of Mysteries. How about you read that quote, Luke?
I don't know what evil force it is that oppresses the Abyss, but it's far beyond the likes of Lastus Ralland or Lana Trent. They're just human beings. Even if they are megalomaniacal narcissists. The Watcher frightens me more than they could ever hope to.
Recorded exactly as passed down from Paul Kasizia to Taryn Galton, Keeper of the Mysteries, year 302 NST. Around them, the spaceport was suddenly in pandemonium. Any people they could see were running for cover. Nate looked at Lyssa, then pointed up the ramp into Adamant, clamping his hand back over his ear to run up the ramp, then smacking the airlock activation to open it. As soon as they were inside and the airlock snapped shut behind them, the sound went from a deafening wail to a muffled, barely audible whine. Nate headed for the bridge, calling over his shoulder. Lyssa, you better come strap in. He found Shannon in the command chair, her eyes fixed on her screen. What's going on? Nate asked.
There's something, two things, coming down on us.
She was obviously distracted, but she replied quickly enough. How close? Should we get in the air? Nate was already heading for a seat. Everyone else on the bridge was seated except Lyssa, who had come in behind him. Shannon shook her head.
They're not going fast enough to actually destroy the city. And if we take off now, we'd better not plan on coming back. Flight control gets prickly about this stuff, and we really could hit somebody. It looks like they'll be about 5 minutes apart. And I think they're both using Retin Drive. Or they were? The second one is big.
From off to one side, where he stopped, Nate could see dread in her eyes, and her scowl was unlike any she'd shown since he came aboard. What is it? Nate asked.
It looks like a changed destroyer.
Nate nodded grimly. Well, that explains the dream. When I dreamed about Sullis, something fell out of the sky and hit me on the head. Shannon gave him a curious look, but all she said was,
The first one should be coming in about a minute, and it's headed straight for us. It's about our size. Flight control just let us know there's been no communication, but I think they might be wrong.
She did something on her panel, then looked over at Nate with a half smirk.
Thought so. They've been using a field communication system. It uses E6 for comms. I hadn't been listening because nobody here uses them.
Just then, a voice came over the bridge speakers.
I say again, this is Travis Retton on Earth's Revenge. Look out below. I don't know if anybody can hear us down there, but we're coming down whether we like it or not. Gonna be a hard landing.
Nate nodded. Somebody else from the Milky Way. Makes sense if that is a changed destroyer following him. A thought struck Nate, and he added, Shannon, can you signal him to land in the empty berth next to us? And relay that communication to the flight control. We can at least do that much. Shannon gave him a thumbs up, then spoke.
Revenge, this is Adamant, sending you a marker. It will bring you in near our position.
There was a fuzz of static. Then Travis's voice came back over the comm.
Shannon? Is that Shannon? Infested void, girl. It's good to hear your voice.
Shannon grinned.
Yeah, that's Travis.
Then she scowled reflexively as if from long habit. She grumbled.
And he's bringing trouble, as usual.
From the hatch, Andrew said,
Travis? What? Here?
Shannon snorted.
He's coming down on us right about
The entire bridge jumped, knocking Lyssa off her feet and staggering Andrew, even though he was holding on to the hatchway. The noise was painful, even through Adamant's hole. Shannon winced.
Now.
Recovering his balance, Andrew shook his head.
Well, that probably didn't hurt us, but I'd hate to see what his landing zone looks like.
After a moment, he added,
Not to mention revenge.
Shannon was already trying to calm, even as Andrew spoke.
Revenge, come in. This is Adamant.
No one answered, and Nate brushed past Andrew, heading for the outer airlock. Outside, Nate ran down the ramp and peered around to see what the situation was. The siren was still blaring. No one else was in sight. In the pad next to theirs, just over 100 yards away, a vessel that very much resembled Adamant or Resolute stuck up from a crater in the landing field. Earth's Revenge had a ragged blackened scar down one side, and the base was impacted into the crumbling concrete. Without stopping, Nate took off running straight for Revenge. As he neared the vessel, Nate felt the almost unbearable heat radiating from it, and without slowing, he hurriedly raised an Energemetra 6 shield to protect himself. When he reached Revenge, Nate ran around it in a circle, looking for the airlock. Halfway around the ship, he found it, mostly buried in the concrete, with only a hand's breadth sticking up above the ground. Nate stopped and studied the situation, then shook his head. There was no time. Nate could see a way to unblock the door, but the collateral damage... He shrugged and reached into the fields, then reared back and punched the concrete next to where the airlock was buried, both pushing and pulling with the fields. The concrete shattered. A great chunk of it came loose and blasted into the air, landing 50 feet away in the center of the walking lane. Riley, fleetingly, he wondered what Ty would say if he could see. That push-pull with Energemetra 6 was far from a simple maneuver. It took 3 more great blows to open a hole big enough to access the airlock. Breathing hard, Nate stepped closer, preparing to break it open. But before he could, it slowly began to slide to one side. Inside, he could see a boy who looked about 16, throwing his weight against a lever, pushing to manually force the airlock open. Behind him was a girl who looked 10 or 11. Nate stepped to the door, and using Energemetra 6, he pushed in the same direction as the boy, presumably Travis. The airlock slid open halfway, and Nate reached a hand down to help them both out. The boy, who was tall with blue eyes and brown hair, came first. He winced at the heat radiating from the outside of the craft and the ground beneath until Nate pulled him inside his own shield. Next, he reached down for the girl, short and solidly built, extending his shield further to protect them both. The hole he'd opened wasn't large, but for the two of them it was more than enough. Sirens still wailed all around, and Nate knew they wouldn't be able to hear him. Instead of speaking, he motioned toward Adamant and hesitated before laying a shield over the surface of the ground, allowing them both to follow with relative ease. All three had to pick their way back through the crater and wreckage, both from the initial impact and his own efforts. As soon as he was clear of the worst of it, Nate started jogging. When they reached Adamant, Jesse and Ty were waiting at the bottom of the ramp, watching him. Andrew, Lyssa, and Rachel all stood higher up on the ramp with their hands over their ears for the siren. It was so loud that Nate didn't even bother trying to say anything. He just led the way back up into Adamant. After they had all come back through the airlock, Andrew closed it behind them. Nate nodded to the two newcomers, but instead of addressing them, he looked at Andrew. How long do we have? Andrew shrugged.
Only a minute or two. It depends on how hard they decide to hit. We should probably strap in. This could be really bad.
Nate motioned to Travis and the girl. We can get acquainted later. Whatever was following you is coming down even harder than you did. They both nodded, though the girl was holding her side and looking pained. It didn't stop her from following as they all headed for the bridge. On the way, Nate asked Andrew, Do we have any kind of shields that work on the ground? Andrew laughed grimly.
We could turn on the particle shield. Wouldn't help with anything much bigger than your head, though. Other than that, we've got nothing.
Nate paused at the hatch leading onto the bridge and looked back at Andrew. Do it. As they entered the bridge, Shannon looked at them with a grimace.
Flight Control says to batten down and strap in.
She looked doubtful.
They seem to think this impact will be survivable.
Outside the bridge window, they could all see a small, short-distance craft tucking in underneath the larger ship across from them. Instead of proceeding to sit down in a seat and strap in like the others, Nate stooped down to pick up the tungsten cube from a compartment on the bottom of his seat. Then he stepped to the wall of the bridge and laid his other hand on it and opened his senses to Energemetra 6. "Tell me when you have the shields on," he said. "I've told you the reason I want to come here was a dream. Well, at the end of the dream, something fell out of the sky on my head. I've got a feeling we're going to need all the protection we can get."
"Okay, you've got it,"
Andrew said.
"We have about 30 seconds left before whatever that is touches down. And it's moving way too fast. People are going to get hurt."
Nate nodded and stretched out with Energemetra 6, searching for the ship's defensive shield. When he found it, he reached out to the planet below them. He wasn't entirely certain how Paul had attached Hope One's particle screen to the nearby moon, but it gave him an idea. Nate reached out through the Sigil of Mysteries and poured his power into the ship's shield, simultaneously bracing himself against the planet's mass. Behind him, Andrew was counting down.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The impact made Revenge's landing seem positively tame by comparison. The ground leaped and bucked like a wild thing. Nate had anchored himself to the ship as he anchored the ship's shield to the planet itself. He felt the motion, but didn't pay it much attention, too busy trying to fortify the ship's shield. He did notice a moment later, though, when what felt like a mountain crashed down on the ship's shields from above, taking all the power he had infused into them in a bare instant. The shield held, and whatever it was skipped off. Then the ship shuddered again from the secondary tremor when the object hit the ground nearby. The aftermath was total stillness. Nate groaned and flopped down into a seat, while Andrew stared out the front window of the ship at what might once have been a building, still clinging to a big hunk of the ground beneath it. The mass of wreckage, which was larger than Adamant itself, sat directly in front of them. Everyone was on the bridge, Nate saw now, and they stared either at him or the massive, twisted mess of metal and scattered rock and building materials. They were all a bit dazed, but whether it was the original impact or the piece of city that had come so close to turning them into pancakes, Nate couldn't tell. Nate grinned weakly at them all. "Told you something fell on my head." Characteristically, Andrew was the first to recover, and his eyes were already on his instruments. He remained silent, but there was something in the set of his shoulders that Nate noticed despite his exhaustion, heavy as it was. Obviously furious, Andrew rose from his chair and crossed the bridge so fast he seemed to teleport, right to where Travis had strapped himself into a seat beside Nate. Eyes flashing, Andrew demanded,
"What did you do?"
Travis flinched, but he came back almost immediately.
"It's not like I invited them."
"Not invited? There are dozens of them. Travis, they're coming."
Travis shrugged, but he nodded grimly.
"We'd better get out of here. There's no stopping them."
Nate was looking back and forth between the two, and he held up a hand. "What? Stopping who?" Andrew turned to him.
"Nate, there are dozens of those ships an hour or two out. The sensors can't even get a good count. The signatures are interpenetrated. The best estimate I got was 40.
Travis winced again.
"Closer to 50 or 60. The really big ones are a few hours behind."
Shannon snorted.
"Travis, always bringing trouble."
"Look, I don't know about you,"
Travis said,
"but I didn't exactly come here on purpose. I don't even know how it happened or where we are."
Laura cut in.
"We can't leave. We don't know whether any of the monsters survived the crash. We can't leave these people to them."
Travis laughed incredulously.
"What? Have you forgotten? We can't even kill one of them, much less a whole ship full. You've lost your mind."
Laura pointed at Nate.
"He can,"
Travis eyed Nate with disbelief, until Shauna chipped in quietly.
He's Amasthena.
Travis blinked in surprise and opened his mouth to reply. Before he could, Nate raised a hand for quiet and looked to Andrew. How long do we have? Andrew shook his head helplessly.
Half an hour? 40 minutes? They're already coming into orbit. It depends on how fast they want to be going when they land. If they come down as hard as the first one did, we could have 50 more ships dropping on us in 20 minutes from now.
Nate looked to Travis. Were they following you or coming to solace themselves? Travis shrugged.
Until we came here, they were following us. Now, I don't know.
Nate frowned. We can't bring 60 of these ships down on solace. One is bad enough. We've got to try to lead them out of here. Lyssa started to unstrap herself.
Well, I have to go. My friends need me.
Nate looked over at her, his face grim. There's no good option here. We can't stay. Laura's head was down, but she asked,
What about the people?
She looked up at Nate, her eyes haunted.
We can't abandon the people here. The changed are monsters. What they did to my family.
Nate shook his head. We can't be everywhere. There are way more of them coming. We have to go. Lyssa had finished unstrapping and she stood up, facing Nate directly. She was resolved, but her tone was apologetic.
I have to stay. They need my help.
Laura looked over to Lyssa.
I'll stay with her.
Lyssa's face blanked in astonishment as Laura began unstrapping herself as well. Nate looked pained. If you stay here, I can't protect you. Laura shrugged in response.
My choice. I can't leave them to face this alone.
There was silence for a long moment. Then Jesse spoke up.
I'll stay too. I'll look out for them.
Nate's frown deepened, but he nodded. It is your choice, and there's no time to debate. He paused, then added, If you stay, keep your focus on helping the people. We'll be back. We can deal with the change then. Jesse nodded soberly back and began unstrapping as well. Lyssa stared at Laura as if she'd never seen her before.
Why? Why stay? I'm not asking for help.
Laura's eyes were hot, and she said tightly,
When the change took Resolute, Rex welded me into my compartment so the change couldn't get me. I couldn't see what happened to Mom or Da or Rex, except through E6. Do you know what the fields look like when a change rips someone's apart? I watched.
She choked off. Then a moment later, she grated,
I couldn't help them. I can't leave a whole planet to those things.
Nate nodded again slowly, but he said, I really wish you wouldn't do this. I can't see any good coming of it. Laura looked briefly conflicted, but she shook her head and trailed Lyssa off the bridge. Jesse stopped to clasp Nate's hand before he too followed the girls out. Nate and the others still on the bridge watched in silence as the three walked quickly away from Adamant. Then, when they were beyond the line that signified a safe takeoff, Nate said, We'd better keep in the air. Time isn't on our side. Kevin, who had been staring out the window, took the opportunity to ask almost plaintively, What are the chances Loradin's beyond this, do you think? Everyone else on the bridge stared at him. Rachel snorted.
You're still stuck on that? This invasion came from another galaxy, Kevin.
Kevin shrugged and mumbled something while Andrew craned his head back around his chair to look Nate directly in the eye.
You realize we're going to have to get past all those ships before we can actually run away, right? We can't even face one or two of them unless you have some sort of plan.
Nate grinned at him, the grimness of his humor making his smile something closer to a rictus. That's the rub, isn't it? I'll do what I can to shore up the shields. Plot the best path through them you can. With that, Nate leaned back in his seat and wrapped his hands around his tungsten cube. As Nate prepared himself mentally for what he knew was coming, he stretched out his senses through Energemetra 6 further than he ever had before. He could see the entire ship around him, and the rapidly thinning atmosphere beyond. The incomprehensible mass of Energemetra 6 behind him was certainly the planet itself, and far above, so far he had to refocus to see them, was the enemy fleet. He could actually sense their evil intent somehow, though he couldn't have said how. The beings aboard those monstrous vessels were driven by wills and purposes not their own. The humans under their thrall almost snuffed out beneath the weight of their oppressors. In the rear of their formation, Nate saw a presence so strong he shied back mentally. If the enemy fleet was alight with malice, this creature was a beacon of it, a piercing blaze of malevolence, its intent focused solely on the frail bubble of life that was Adamant. A creeping horror began to take root in Nate's gut as the presence's attention fell on him directly. It called forcibly to his mind the encounter he'd had with the Changed in the belly of the behemoth. It was the same horror, attenuated by distance, but Nate didn't have time to pay it any special mind. The vessel that had crashed into Solace had been big, about 3 or 4 times the size of Adamant. Despite that, of the entire fleet arrayed above them, it was the smallest, a hound that was built for speed. Each member of the fleet's vanguard was at least 10 times Adamant's size, while some of the monsters behind them were an order of magnitude larger. The sheer mass of that fleet was overwhelming, and the power they could bring to bear was just as impressive. Nate could sense the Energemetra 6 charges already building up in the huge ship's weapon batteries. They were brute force weapons with no finesse or control over their output. Still, the amount of raw energy those ships could throw was monumental. For a moment, he quailed at the thought of facing that firepower. He had never used even a fraction of the Energemetra 6 required to turn back such a tide. But there was no choice. It was time to face it or die under its onslaught. Nate focused his attention fully on the fields and on the Sigil of Mysteries with its lensing effect. Now the question was how much power he could actually handle.
"Nate?" Andrew asked. Then again, after a pause, "Nate?" There was no response for what felt like a very long time. The seconds ticked by as Andrew watched the enemy loom closer and closer on the plot in front of him. Slowly, the tremendous force of their thrust subsided, and their retin drive began to come online, bringing artificial gravity and its inertial sump along with it. When gravity had returned to normal enough for him to move, Andrew turned in his chair and looked back at Nate. Nate was completely checked out, evidently deep in concentration. Whatever the case, it left Andrew with no doubt he was on his own, and he muttered, "Abyssal void." From the corner of his eye, Andrew saw Shannon eyeing him with concern, and he turned to her. "I have to decide whether to take a path directly past them, which is the shortest route out, and gives them the least time to shoot at us, or to go oblique, which means they're going to have a harder time hitting us, but it'll take longer to get clear." Andrew jerked his head sideways. "And he's not going to be much help." Shannon shook her head.
"Come on, Drew. You got hurt when we were running from them. But you can't let that stop you. You're leaning on him too much. I understand why, but you've been making decisions like this ever since Dad died. Nate trusted you with this."
Andrew closed his eyes for what felt like a long time, longer than they could really afford, then nodded sharply and began inputting a course into their computer.
The first blast of raw power that impacted Adamant's shields didn't come as a surprise, exactly. But Nate's attention had been on testing his limits. As he felt the Energemetra 6 battering at the shields, trying to overwhelm them and sweep through the ship, he focused on drawing power out of himself and the world around him, through the sigil and into the shields. If even a fraction of the attack got through, it would vaporize them instantly. The raw power it took was tremendous, almost unimaginable to him even now. But he did it. In fact, he did it easily, without really straining himself. The amount of energy he could use with the sigil was so vast, he found that when he tried hard to draw raw power, the difficulty was actually in restraining and controlling the flow, rather than creating it. The trouble was the extropy it created. As he pushed Energemetra 6 into the shields, it gathered rapidly, like negative energy flowing out of his hands into the tungsten cube. He couldn't control the stuff, but he could see it if he concentrated properly. It was like thick, foul whirls of darkness, reaching out of him and sucking the life energy out of the world. There was no stopping it. It simply happened. After a moment, he realized his tungsten cube was almost gone. All that was left was a pile of dust in his lap and a few fragments still clutched in his hands. Andrew wasn't going to be happy, but Nate pulled his hands out of his lap and slapped them against the bulkhead behind him. Then the enemy assault intensified, and Nate lost the ability to concentrate on anything beyond the next wave of power colliding with the shields and ripping at them, then reacting with the previous barrage to create unpredictable explosions, or even, once or twice, huge chunks of matter. Was that ice? He reached out and shattered them, blasting them outward in a way as the ship would have crashed into them, leaving pieces, some the size of small buildings, to rain down on the planet behind them. He couldn't spare them a thought. All his attention was required just to meet the next onslaught.
An ugly certainty that he'd made the wrong decision had taken hold of Andrew. This was taking too long. The wave of power that crashed into them, sleeting off the shields and into the void, definitely came closer to overwhelming them than the last one. Nate had held out for almost 30 unbelievable minutes under conditions Andrew could never have imagined, until he saw those incredible waves of energy, and they were only halfway through. The range was slowly opening up, but he'd taken them on the long route. It would be another 30 or 40 minutes before they were far enough away that the last enemy could no longer effectively hit them. Another wave of power sliced in, and their shields were completely shattered for a gut-wrenching few seconds before Nate managed to restore them. The strain on Adamant's systems was showing, too. Their shields were a simple system, but the secondary capacitors were at their thermal limit, and it was all Andrew could do to force himself to maintain his focus, knowing that now, when it mattered, he was blowing it. In panic, he almost reached out to Energemetra 6 to lend his own strength to Nate, but he couldn't. Whether from fear or simple prudence, he couldn't tell. Andrew sat there for what felt like a very long time, but could only have been seconds. His senses focused on the titanic struggle going on around him, feeling like a coward. Then, finally, he forced himself to stop and adjust their course once again, jinking to keep their heading as unpredictable as possible. "Help him!" Andrew cried, trying desperately to gain any advantage he could over the maelstrom of power lashing them from every direction.
Nate was so focused, the fact that he was getting tired crept up on him unaware. His mind losing its quickness and a flagging in his ability to direct his energies hit him suddenly. The bulkhead behind him was losing its integrity as well. It was a good thing it backed up onto an interior corridor instead of space itself, he thought. A wave of power came in and nearly crushed him, his mind having wandered for just a moment. He knew then that he was losing it, and he struggled to gather himself to meet the next onslaught. As if the enemy had sensed Nate's weakness, the pause before the next attack was longer, and the next volley of power that blasted out of the enemy armada was by far the strongest yet. It must have required the full armament of every enemy vessel in range to create such a barrage of interpenetrated power. All he could do was contract his shield closer around Adamant and hold on. To his surprise, his strength was enough, just barely, to bear up against the tide. Until it wasn't. The brunt of the blow had torn his shield to shreds, and the tail of the attack streaked on to strike them unopposed. Then, as the energy reached Adamant's hull, another presence joined Nate, and a new shield formed, tight to Adamant's skin. Adamant's new defense was flimsy and thin compared to Nate's, amplified by the sigil, even as tired as he was. But it was just barely enough to deflect the last remnant of the enemy's wave. Almost instantly, that presence was joined by a second with a cry of fear so primal, he actually felt it through the energy fields themselves. Then Nate felt another joining him. Rachel's presence, buoying him up as her own shield took the brunt of the following attack. His relief was beyond words, but he still couldn't spare the time for more than a brief burst of gratitude. John joined them next. A moment later, he felt Ty, then Kevin, then Shannon and Shauna at once, all adding their own efforts to his. There was no communication as such, but they followed his lead as he formed a shell to protect the vessel from a wash of gray, then deflected a gout of red around him. It was as if the enemy realized their defenses were strengthening, and the opportunity to kill Adamant had passed. Either that, or they had overloaded their weapons, because the enemy's fire slackened noticeably following that tremendous barrage. After that, Nate and his friends fended it off almost casually. Nate, having recovered himself enough to actually move his hands away from the holes he'd just made in the wall behind him and onto metal that was beginning to crumble, but still relatively intact. As the fight wore on, his friends slowly lost their own edges, and he could tell the entropic shock was hurting them all. But none wavered. Even the two comparatively much smaller presences that had joined him first, the ones he knew must be Travis and the girl, were hanging on. They had passed the worst of it, and slowly began to outdistance the enemy, accelerating exponentially away as they got clear of the planet and the star's gravity well. To his elation, Nate saw distantly that the enemy was following. He wasn't sure if they would, but their meteoric run through the enemy's gauntlet had been enough to pull them away from Solus. As the last blasts of energy fell away behind them, Nate finally opened his physical eyes and called to Andrew. "Keep them on our tail, straight for the abyss." Then the darkness claimed him.
The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that ends Chapter 14 of The Veil of Mysteries. Thank you, everybody. Thank you to all of our listeners for being here. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Oldest and Second. And, I don't know, I think I ended that chapter in exactly the right place, because I'm looking forward to next week after having just finished it. So, thank you, everybody. We will catch you all next time.